Taking the ride on the Freedom Train podcast series. I'm your host, Joseph Ward, and as always, ride with me is my good homie, Mr. Patrick Irving. Remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PAX Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit their website at www.pactsinc.org. That way you learn more about the organization, the codes of conduct that they created. You can get involved in the organization. If you hover your mouse over the More tab, you'll see the Learning Center comes up. And you can click on the Learning Center and go through all the information and learn as much as you want about black history and black politics and things that have happened in black history. So once again, it's www.pactsinc.org. While you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. You learn more about myself, Patrick, all of our wonderful guests that we've had, and our plethora of shows, because we can say that now. We have a plethora of shows. We actually have a show coming out every day of the week now. So make sure you visit our website so you can check out our lineup of shows. Remember, all of our shows are on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, on YouTube. You can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at Freedom Train Net. You can follow us on Instagram, Freedom Train Network. We're pretty much everywhere, Radio Republica. And Pat, tell them about the app.
We got an app, so you should get it. But only if you got Google, Android. Because if you got an iPhone, we ain't got an app for you. No, no, and it ain't our fault. It's the fault of the Apple people. Anyway, we got an app. So,
Yeah. And what about the live stream?
Oh, and we got the live stream going down all through your city and your town. Now, we got a live stream, internet stream going down on the weekends. It plays all of the shows through that have come out throughout the week on a loop, usually an 8 to 12 hour loop. And throughout the week, we be dropping you with some lectures from some of the prominent master teachers like Dr. Joseph Ben Yakinen and Dr. Bam. John Henry Clark and Dr. Charles Wilson and Dr. Francis Chris Wilson and Dr. Miriam B. Any I messed that up. Anyway, so you know, Shajra Ali, you know, so that's what we got coming at you through the week. So you can get that also through the app. And pretty soon we're going to be listed on iHeartRadio and all of the other, you know, apps that you use to get radio stations to listen to music. You'll be able to get Freedom Train radio stream on those apps.
There you go. See, it's going down. We're growing and It's happening. But the reason y'all listening in today is because, you know, it's us continuing our awareness about mental health disparities within the black community. And today on the show, we have a young lady who was on our show last year during the time of Mental Health Awareness Month. And she came through and gave us a lot of information. So she's family to the show, right? So we decided to bring her back to be able to talk to her. So this is, I already told her she's going to be our reoccurring mental health expert for the Freedom Train podcast series. But she has an educational background in rehabilitation counseling. She actually got her master's degree from Thomas University, and she's a certified rehabilitation counselor. She has a BS in psychology from Florida State University. She feels that working within the fields of mental health is somewhat of a calling on her life. She also dabbles in cognitive behavioral therapy. She hails from the city of Tallahassee, Florida. I've known her for a long time. She's usually one of the most level-headed people around us. But we love the ways that she takes her information and uses her information to enhance the people that she comes across. It's not just someone who's just out here just trying to wave her credentials in people's faces, but she's actually an asset to the community and to the clients that she serves. So I want all of you to get up off your feet, put your hands together, little man in a little shirt, and stand up for your spaceship, Trey Dixon. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Stop. Go Stacey. Go Stacey. Go Stacey. Go Stacey. What's up, young lady? How you doing today?
I am great and glad to be sitting at the table with the cool kids again. How are you all?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Shoot, we cool.
There you go. There you go. Pat, go get her extra bluebird. Get her extra
what?
Bluebird.
What?
We got to make her couch bigger on the Freedom
know,
Train.
Right?
On
know,
the Freedom
right?
Train.
Right, you get two bluebirds now.
Yeah.
Cool. There we go.
That's right. And we not going to throw them at the young kids.
That'll be good. That's not good
right.
Mental health.
You actually
you
get
go.
To drink yours.
So you know how we do it.
Hold on, Joe. You got to tell people what bluebirds is because everybody ain't had those growing up.
Well, bluebirds, the little juices. Bluebirds, the actual brand name of the juices, the fruit punch juice that we used to drink in high school. So if you didn't drink a bluebird, you weren't cool.
Yeah. Came in cans, like sodas. You throw them at people.
I didn't. I was a good person.
I don't believe that, Joseph.
Me neither, though.
Josephus. So.
You got the first question, man. Go ahead and kick this thing up.
Word.
Mm-hmm.
So, madame, mademoiselle, for those people who just now getting cool, hey, let me ask you something. And this don't have nothing to do with mental health, but I am wondering, and I probably could have asked this before the show, but it'd be interesting during the show as well. I'm all the way in character now, so.
Okay.
Are they still telling women to scream? Are they, like, to your knowledge, are they still telling women to scream fire if you're getting raped or sexually assaulted?
I don't know if they're still telling adult women that. They are definitely still telling small children that. And I say that because my niece takes karate at a dojo here locally. And when she was about 3, when she started, they start with self-defense. And that was what she was instructed to say. We didn't think that was particularly helpful because people will be in a building with a fire alarm going off and keep doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
So we just taught her to, like, drop to the floor and scream as loud as she possibly can and, like, kick and flail on the floor because that will actually get people to look at you. But I don't know about the grown-ups.
I asked that because I was in a conversation with some people, and they were obviously younger than me because I don't have no friends. So, shut up, Joe. So, what was happening was we was talking about domestic violence and some of the mental health causes of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, one of the young ladies was like, well, one of her teachers had told her that if she was getting raped, she should scream fire. And I remember them saying that, like, when we were coming up, I remember hearing that said to my sister and said to other people, other females in groups that I was in. But I thought we had kind of moved beyond that point to where, you know, if you scream rape, nobody would come. You got to scream fire. You got to trick people into saving you.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of like, damn, are we still doing that in 2018? We still, if you scream rape, nobody will come. You got to scream fire.
Well, our society is totally different. We don't care for each other the way we should. So that's why, right, you have to, especially like young kids, but you have to instruct them to do something that will actually get somebody's attention rather than, you know, getting to the point where, because, I mean, think about it. We're telling them something that's an alternative to screaming help. So if you yell help, people don't even come. So the fact that we got to think about an alternative to that is an issue.
It just didn't make sense to me because me, if I hear somebody screaming fire, I'm not running towards the fire.
Right. You're trying to leave. You're trying to get
right.
out.
Right. I'm going the other way. If I so that it seems like if people aren't going to come when you're screaming rape, they most definitely aren't going to come if you screaming fire. Like that just, and that's the way I've always thought about it. But when I heard them say that, I was just kind of like, you know, damn, we still doing like, and why do we still assume that fire is a good word? Why don't you scream like, I don't know, I've been shot, or I don't know, something, I don't know. Fire seems inappropriate on something. But anyway, that's off topic. That's our off topic section.
Yeah,
so Stacy, how you been? What's up? Tell the people a little bit about yourself. Those ones that ain't cool, they don't know, and they ain't gonna go back and listen to old shows because you know people. So, you know, tell people a little bit about yourself and how you got going into mental health, and tell people especially how you became friends with somebody as unstable as Josephus Alahoosius Ward.
So, as Mr. Ward said, I studied psychology in undergrad and rehabilitation counseling in grad school. And so as far as the what I do part of who I am, that's what it is, rehabilitation counseling and therapy based in cognitive behavioral therapy. But other than that, I am, what do we say about Stacy? I am Sam's wife. I'm Samara and Matthew's mom. And those two jobs are the top priorities in my life. But it's, you know, being friends with Joe, that's Sam's fault. we blame him for that. But Joe is good people. So, you know, he's one of the cool kids. And so since I wanted to be one of the cool kids, we had to get on the train with Joe, you know?
Pat.
She was that's nice.
That's why we friends. Okay.
She was nice.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, we were like I was telling you earlier, Pat and I was talking. Another reason why we wanted to bring you back is because of the uniqueness in our minds, the uniqueness of what you do. Because cognitive behavior therapy, things of that nature, we don't necessarily know about that because we've never really heard of it before. So it's just the angles that you bring into the mental health field, and the population of people that you may be seeing are those that we may not even really think about having mental health disorders or mental health issues or any other thing like that, because we could be looking at other things. But you do deal in the realm of rehabilitation, so we do feel like that's an important part of therapy and mental health, because we have a lot of people who things have happened and they're not rehabilitated properly. You know, when you throw them back into society, they're not going to be able to really function the way they want to.
For sure.
I do appreciate that.
So by rehabilitativeness, what you're saying is that after the doctor gives them like the electroshock therapy, right? And he zapped their brain to get them back right? So they was crazy, but now they've been electrocuted and they sane again. You the one that come in and be like, all right, so we done zapped your brain and now we got to get you to be normal again instead of being like a robot from the future, like on some Star Trek stuff, right? That's what we talking about?
Ish. You know, we want to restore function and restore balance. So, you know, whatever your starting point is, if it's robot, then we got to start at robot. Might be something else, so we'll start there. And basically just trying to restore you to whatever your working level is or that you're trying to go so that you can be the best version of you.
So does that work on, like, if somebody in, like, a robot is, like, too human and you got to rehabilitate them back to robot? Is that the same thing?
So I actually don't have any CEUs yet in robot studies. But as soon as I get them, you know, then I can, like, go to Westworld and see if it works.
You might get you some CEU. If you read 10 memes in a day, you can get a CEU. You know that, right?
I should be set for the next 5 years.
Is that a mental health ailment that we currently have in society, memes? Like, is there some sort of, because I honestly think people that believe memes aren't mentally stable. Is there a diagnosis for, like, you know, memification or, like, you know, I don't know.
Memography.
Am I being weird?
I mean, yeah. Gullible is not really a textbook diagnosis, but we have a lot of that.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, people will see something and take it at face value. Because, you know, a lot of people think if I saw it on the internet, it must be true.
Right.
So I don't know if all the resources in the world could erase, particularly Americans, just taking stuff off the internet and off TV and running with it.
Right. So let me ask you this, because, you know, I've been around you for like 20 years now. Well, we've been down for like 20 years now.
Yep.
So you're a very, very, very intelligent young lady. You're very capable. You're very skilled. If you don't have a skill, you have the ability to learn the skill. What, out of all the disciplines, all the paths, all the fields that you could get into, why the mental health field? What was it about this field that kind of drawn you and became somewhat of a passion to you?
So that actually took some soul searching, if you will. When I was coming out of high school and first got into college, I wanted to be a physician. Like, okay. I just knew I was going to med school, and I wanted to do family practice, but specialized in geriatric care. Like, I was going to be the person that was going to have all these Alzheimer's treatments, and that was going to be my lot in life, to find a cure for that, or at least find a suitable treatment.
Right.
And that just, it, the more I got into studying biology and chemistry, it wasn't fun, and it felt like a chore, and medical school just seemed like something that I would hate, like, if I was actually to do it. So I changed my major to psychology from biological sciences and fell in love with the idea of caring for people's minds more so than, you know, the rest of their body. And so going through undergrad and into graduate school, I wanted to keep that going. I was always one of those kids that wanted to be in a quote-unquote helping profession. So working in mental health just kind of was the next step in that evolution after academia. So that's how I found my way into mental health and therapy.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
And what would you say is the most, I'm sorry, Joe, did I cut you
off? No, go ahead. You straight, go ahead.
I was going to say, so what would you say is, like, the most, over the past year, because I think we asked you this question last year, so over the past year, what would you say has been the most regular or the most reoccurring mental health issue that you've seen come through your office?
That's still going to be depression and anxiety. I've seen a little bit more PTSD. Actually, the most recent person that I was helping had PTSD as a result of a failed relationship. But the unresolved PTSD led to an anxiety disorder. And because she started having trouble at work and having trouble in school, it led to some generalized depression. So a lot of things are concurrent, and you will find depression and or anxiety either at the root or at the tail end of what's going on with a lot of people that are seeking help.
I tried to tell them last week. Well, I ain't try to tell them. I asked the question, and they all laughed at me. But I was like, yo, can you get PTSD from a bad breakup? And they was all like, man, Pat, you stupid. And I was like, no, I'm serious. Like, if you with, like, I was like, if Joe was with this girl, right, and she was like, forget you, I don't want to be with you no more, and your sex game whack, and it was just traumatic. Not just hypothetically. That's no shots at you, Joe. But, you know, and it was a traumatic event. Could he develop PTSD from that?
Yes.
See, it didn't go quite like that. But I,
that's exactly how it
happened. Nah, you said what you said, but he didn't say it wasn't possible. But he was just saying it wasn't one of the most, it wasn't one of the cases that he saw on a regular basis. It was more other things, other traumas that the person suspected. But it still left the door open for possibilities. But that's what I was just going to say, though. The gentleman last week talked about how PTSD, depression, and anxiety are three of the most common mental health disorders that he is starting to notice within Black Americans, or especially the ones that he sees on a regular basis. So I want to ask this. What do you think, especially like PTSD and some of the other ones, what do you think within Black Americans are some of the causes that can bring about these mental health disorders within these people?
That's tough, because like to pinpoint a cause, I'm not qualified to necessarily do that. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely a combination of nature and nurture when it comes to mental health disorders. There are several things that have genetic links. And like that's known, it's proven as far as we can prove, you know, medicine and science. Some disorders have genetic links. There are some schizophrenia specifically. There is a genetic link with that disorder. But other things are caused due to environment, your situation, the things that you are exposed to, the traumas that you are exposed to. Even toxins in your environment can cause mental health disorders. I had a client that took it upon himself to smoke with some guys he had just met. And I don't smoke. But I know the number one rule is you smoke with people you know. Because you need to know what you're putting in your body as best you can. He didn't do that. Like, it was some people lighting up. He was like, all right, I'll join you. He ended up with a very bad case of schizophrenia. I mean, hallucinations, auditory, visual, the whole nine, because he smoked some bad weed. That was an environmental toxin. He had no family history, nothing like that. So the causes can be different things, if you want to call it a cause. But it can be genetic. It can be environmental. Sometimes it's just a physiological miswiring, if you will, in somebody's brain that causes an imbalance.
Okay. And because I know last year we talked about it in some of the previous interviews this year, we're talking about PTSS, post-traumatic stress syndrome,
mm-hmm.
just you know, being a Black person in America. Because I think we've all talked about this, but just being in America, being an American, living in this society where all these different things are happening, has a definite effect on all Americans' mental health. But the ones who are more at risk, in my opinion, are being exposed and bombarded a little more so. Because I see it every day when I'm in these streets, and it's crazy. I see so many, from young to old, Black people walking down the street talking to themselves, being discarded by people, all these things because, and either, like you said, either nature or nurture, and it's just happening. But, you know, one of the reasons why we're doing these interviews in this Mental Health Awareness Month is to hopefully get people to start paying more attention to, if not strangers, loved ones that's in your family. Don't just throw them in the corner like, oh, that's just old, like your crazy cousin, your crazy uncle. Like, no, something is really happening with this person needs care. So that's where I'm at with it. It's like, as I'm listening to you talk, that's where my mind is going, because I just see it so much, and it's, I just want to be able to do more, you know?
Right.
Is there a way to become a mental health worker without going to college?
So you could probably work in, let me start over. The answer, short answer, yes. Because there are individuals that work. One of the first jobs, actually the first job I had coming out of college, was for a local information and referral hotline, 211 Big Ben. But before I graduated, I volunteered there. And there were individuals that were volunteers, like people who just wanted to give their time because they believed in the cause of 211 Big Ben. And they went through a training. It took 6 weeks, so it wasn't just like a weekend thing. But they went through a training on how to provide some very basic counseling over the phone to people. And those people are kind of unsung heroes in that they are definitely mental health workers because they answer suicide hotlines. They're trained in suicidology. They deal with individuals having issues with pregnancy. They answer an HIV hotline and counsel those people as well. Some of them go on to complete college. Others don't. They just believe in that mission. And so they are mental health workers out there working to provide a service, which is free, to people in the community that may not have a resource otherwise. Now, to become a licensed or credentialed professional, then there's going to be some schooling involved. Now, you may transfer, you know, between what you study, but to, how do I say, sell yourself, if you will, as a mental health professional, you probably are going to have that credential, those credentials that come from schooling.
So if you want to make money, you need to go to school.
If you want to make it legally.
Right.
Okay.
I got you.
I got a question. Of course you do, mm-hmm. Patrick. It's an interview.
Right. He always say that.
I know, and I always catch myself right out there come out. Well, these are supposed to be conversations, so.
You got a question.
So, I was reading this thing the other day, and it was talking about the prevalence of Becky disorder in the Black community. I call it Becky disorder. I'm talking about food eating disorders like bulimia, anorexia, and binge eating disorders, things of that nature. And I call them Becky disorders not to be disrespectful to the Black people that have them, the Black girls that have them, because I know Black women have them, but because when I was introduced to them, that's how they were introduced to me as Becky disorders. And I know I need to make that change in my mind, and I'm going to do that right now. Thank you, Stacey, for correcting me. But I was asking because I was reading this report, and it was talking about how even in the community, the prevalence of the disease can't be identified because when they showed, they did a case study, and they showed that they showed a number of clinicians, women with the exact same symptoms, and all they did was change the race. And they found that for 40%, 45% of these women, when they were white, they were designated as having some sort of eating disorder. 40% when they were Hispanic, and only 17% were diagnosed with some sort of eating disorder when they were Black. And so that prompted me to think about, you know, the prevalence of stereotyping, of cultural ignorance, and various other things. How pervasive do you think that things like that are in the field of mental health?
Oh, it definitely is an issue. Like you said, you know, it, the stereotyping and the generalizations is rampant. Because I was the same way, you know, being introduced to those disorders when you first hear about them. As our people like to say, that's not something we get.
Right?
And so, you know, a part of the misdiagnosis or non-diagnosis is on the person presenting the symptoms. Now, the case study you introduce is people, you know, just kind of being given a list of symptoms and the demographic information changing. And that shows a problem. But a lot of times when we go to clinicians or practitioners and present, we have in our minds, like, this, it can't be that, because we don't get that. So if I've internalized, if the dialogue in my head is, it can't be binge eating, it can't be anorexia, because we don't get that, the other people get that, then I'm going to present as something else. And my doctor, whomever I'm talking to, is going to have to dig a lot harder to find the root cause. And a lot of times, especially if you have insurance, your 15-minute appointment doesn't allow for that. And so if you don't recognize it as an actual mental health issue, you've decided that it's something else and you present it as something else, it's going to be missed. Now, it is up to professionals to make sure that they are being sensitive to their clientele, and that stereotyping, those generalizations, that those practitioners clearly weren't paying attention to as far as themselves. If you're not paying attention, or you are ignoring or letting your worldview color what is in front of you despite what's being presented, then you're going to have that continue to happen. You'll get people not diagnosed or misdiagnosed based on their demographic information because somebody is simply not being as careful as they should.
All right. That's true. Yeah, but, you know, though, I still think those two things are not taken seriously within our community, because we still look at them as, you know, Pat said, the Becky disorders or the white girl disorders. So, I just hope moving forward in the future that we can start, you know, paying more attention and really taking things serious and kind of not just putting stuff in categories. And if it doesn't fit my level of comfort, I'm not going to give it the attention that it needs. So.
Right. So, beside note, real quick, before y'all move on to the next thing, because I just think it's really important as a person that has a little brown daughter, those little jokes that we keep in our families or that we tell in our families, those can be problematic for people as they grow up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when your daughter is trying on a new skirt and she's 3, and you say, oh, look at them chunky thighs. Okay, baby thighs are chunky, and chunky baby thighs are cute. We know that as adults. 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds don't. And so when we make a comment about chunky thighs or, oh, look, I'm a pinch inch, when she's 16, there's a different conversation going on in her head, and that can in turn lead to some of those things. So that's that environmental part of a cause that, you know, is unintended, but can happen. You know, little girl, we have a very whitewashed viewpoint of beauty. I mean, it is what it is. It's a very whitewashed and European viewpoint of beauty as far as the standard in this country. And so thin is what it is. And if your genetic makeup doesn't ever allow you to attain what you see, and then your aunties and the people that are caring for you have told you all your life, oh, look at them chunky thighs. You out here doing whatever you can to fix it. And sometimes that fix, because we know teenagers are short-sighted and they're underdeveloped brains, can turn into real serious issues. So, and not just our girls. Let me be careful to say that, because it can happen to males as well. But those little things that we say in jest, our kids are listening. So let's just be careful about the internal dialogue that we help to create.
That was the most polite way to say they stupid that I've ever heard in my life.
Who, teenagers?
Yeah, that's good.
Well, you know.
And they're underdeveloped brains and their short-sightedness. That is, you know what? Where's the fat man with the shirt? Yo, that is dope. I ain't never heard somebody call people stupid so politely in my life. That was amazing.
I'm trying to help the dialogue. I'm trying.
Oh, well, I just blew that out the water. Yeah, you stupid. Yeah. I said it.
You messed up. So, we've mentioned cognitive behavioral therapy, and I know we talked about it last year, but could you give us a refresher on what it is and how it's used to help treat the patients or the clients that you come across?
Right. So cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, as you'll hear it talked about or you'll see it, is a type of psychotherapy that was developed by Dr. Aaron Beck. And what he realized was that there is an internal dialogue, that internal dialogue that I mentioned, and there's a connection between people's thoughts and their feelings that you have to deal with. That's what turns into people's actions, that connection between their thoughts and their feelings. And so he developed CBT. And what it is in a nutshell is a short-term, goal-oriented, real hands-on type of counseling or therapy. And so what a practitioner will do is they'll come in and they'll kind of give you a timeline based on what it is that you want to work on. And they'll give you assignments and different things to work toward in order to help find a resolution to what your issue is. And so for me, that's kind of what has worked best with my clientele, with their anxiety or their depression, giving small steps and goals to work toward is a lot more beneficial than people coming in and thinking they got to lie on the couch and recount everything that's happened in their lives and what their auntie did and what their grandma did. We'll work on that later if you want to talk about it. But right now, let's figure out, you know, why you can't get into a car without having a trigger from an event that happened when you were 19 and you're 35. Let's deal with that and see how to go forward.
Eddie,
you said something a while back that I want to go back to. You mentioned insurance companies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that is being brought up more in mental health discussions, but it's still not something that is talked about in any depth in the conversations. Can you, if you can, and if you're willing, can you break down for people that link between the insurance industry and the current level and quality of mental health care available to them?
I'll be honest. Mental health services, as far as what we think about, you know, kind of the basics, therapy and stuff, when it comes to insurance, it doesn't pay a lot. And that's not to discourage anybody from seeking. But when you're talking about big insurance companies and how they treat mental health services, and when you see that there's a disconnect between need and availability, that's a lot of it. Medicine is expensive. Medicine pays better. Now, don't get me wrong. If you have spoken to a practitioner and medication is a part of your treatment plan, please adhere to the treatment plan of your practitioners. Please trust them and their expertise in their said fields and go with that. But in a broader conversation, when it comes to insurance companies and things like that, just therapy by itself doesn't pay a lot. It's not profitable for insurance. And so that makes it difficult for people to have access. Now, I'm not sure if you're asking, like, what people should do if they have insurance, or just more along the lines of why mental health services look the way they look with big insurance.
No, you answered my question, which was, why does it look the way it looks?
Gotcha.
But you presented another great question for yourself. What should people do?
If you have insurance, then the first thing I would recommend people do is contact your insurance provider. Aetna, Cigna, Blue Cross Blue Shield, your Capital Health Plan, whomever it is, because they are going to be able to give you a list of providers in your area. They can also tell you who's currently accepting clients. one thing that can be totally crushing is to go through and read on all these people, and then you call them, they tell you, I can't take you right now because I'm full. So they can give you all of the information you need to at least make a decision on where to start. If you don't have insurance, one of the things that I would say is use the internet. It can be beneficial at times because there are certainly practitioners who will accept you on a sliding scale fee, which means they'll adjust what it costs based on like what you make or where you live, things like that. Some that will offer services for free. A lot of practitioners in all walks of life, in all fields, offer some free services every year. Or they can put you in contact with community resources that can help you with that. Also, your local information and referral hotline should be 211. Wherever you are in the United States, if you dial 211 from your phone, you're going to get connected to the local information and referral hotline. They can give you information on what's available in the community that you're calling about.
Yeah. Boom. In your face, sucker fish.
Shaka-laka, shaka-laka. All right, go. So, I want to ask this question because a lot of people have unhealthy coping methods.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have no idea what coping is, even though that's what they're doing. So, could you break down what coping is? And from your time in mental health, what are some of the most common ways that people use to cope that are not necessarily productive?
Right. By definition, coping is being able to adequately deal with responsibilities or problems.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like you said, a lot of people, when you start talking about coping mechanisms, we usually only talk about coping mechanisms when somebody is doing something negative. And for most people that I've come in contact with, they have shut themselves off because they feel like if they shut themselves off and stop letting people see them, it'll reduce what they feel. For some reason, people feel like if they ignore something long enough, then they'll go numb to it. That usually doesn't happen, but that is what they do. And then, of course, you hear talking about people talking about self-medicating. Now, self-medicating can look like different things. Of course, it can look like what most people think, substance abuse. People think drugs and alcohol when we hear self-medicating. But people self-medicate basically with anything that takes place of an actual treatment plan for what's right. going on in their lives. So people self-medicate with food. People self-medicate, of course, with drugs and alcohol. People self-medicate with risky behaviors, be it sexually or people that you see that they call adrenaline junkies.
Yeah.
We hype these people up as having fun. A lot of times there are underlying issues because putting yourself in harm's way is not the natural way of being. Like, you're supposed to preserve yourself. That's the natural order. So doing right. things that are extremely risky and that can do you great bodily harm is a lot of times a coping mechanism for someone.
I never thought about, especially what you said, that the adrenaline junkie, people chasing thrills as a coping method for things that they're trying to overcome in life. I never thought about that. That's interesting. But I guess if you get the same release of chemicals within the brain, then it could over and over again still become that thing that you're chasing. So.
Right. I mean, and that's what they call it, and they literally call them adrenaline junkies. Like, that's the only kind of junkie we hype up, right?
Right.
Nobody
right,
wants
right.
to be a junkie unless it's an adrenaline junkie. But, I mean, doing stunts on a motorcycle at 95 miles an hour with no helmet, most
that's
people will tell
smart.
You that's not normal.
Right.
Because why would you do that?
But some people see it as living on the edge.
Right. It's fun. Yeah. Like, you know, diving in the ocean in a cage with modified bars, and there are giant great whites, and so you're going to chum the waters to attract the sharks. Like, that most people would not think that that's normal. I hate to throw out the N-word, but most people would tell you that that's not a normal way of thinking. But because we put it under the umbrella of fun, we rationalize what it is. We just rationalize that away when it could be covering up something that is a lot more serious.
Right.
Let me ask you something about that. Self-medicating, doing things that would normally be seen as extreme but are rationalized because of the context that the conversations are usually had in. So, what would you say about a woman that likes to have sex and be strangled to the point of blacking out during sex? That's the issue, right?
So, that's definitely not for me. I'm a firm believer that consenting adults can do what they want to do. But when you're talking about being strangled to the point of blacking out, that's just physically not safe. Because unless you're going to introduce something that can show you what your respiratory rate is and what your brain activity is, on that line, you don't really know. And so you are walking a very, very dangerous line in terms of, you know, not actually coming to. And so that would, I don't know if there's necessarily a diagnosis for that, but anything to me, anything that puts you in your body in that much danger, is not something that you should attempt. Because if it were kids playing pillow fight and they changed the rule to let's see who could have a pillow held over their face as long as possible, like we're going to set the timer for 4 minutes and see what happens, parents would be up in arms and we would probably have a call for some legislative action on pillows. Right? We would want all our kids to have mesh pillows.
No more pillows.
Exactly. We're going to have pillow control, right? So, because why would you want to black out? That's just not safe in general. So, yeah, that would be problematic.
See? I don't know what I'm saying C for. I just felt like I should say C right there.
Tell your girl that's not safe.
Yeah, you know, and then also you got to, especially if she wants you to hook a car battery up to her nipples before she do it. You got issues. I be trying to tell these people.
She's Joe? Not a science experiment.
Right.
Don't do that.
Yeah. And that hurts.
Right. Right. Stop sticking stuff in the electrical socket in the end or whatever you stuck in there. That's not going to work out.
There you go. Be brave. Be safe.
Keep trying to self-medicate with all of these things.
So I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
In our community, a lot of times when people are having mental health episodes, the police are called. And we see that goes wrong because police are not trained to deal with mental health patients mm-hmm. who have episodes. So what advice would you give to people who are listening to this podcast who have encountered or may encounter or know other people who encountered the situation where somebody who has mental health issues has an episode and the police are called? So how do we get people to understand that they should call a behavioral health unit, and how do they even get the information to access or to know who to call rather than calling the police?
If, I'll be honest, if a person is not posing a danger to themselves or to somebody else, leave them alone. Okay. Now, if somebody's having an episode where they're running in traffic and they need some assistance to be contained because they're going to hurt somebody or hurt someone else, then you have to call. And not to knock calling the police, because They are supposed to protect and serve. That is what they are supposed to do. In the event that's the only people that you can call, by all means, don't let somebody hurt themselves or hurt someone else. Now, I would say if you're going to use the police, be very forthcoming with all of the information. Like, hey, I think this person is having some type of episode, so that they approach the situation, at least with what you have given them. But if if you think a person just may need some help and they're not seeking it, your local 211 is a good place to start if it's not an emergency situation. That way you can get the resources to find out who you can call. Now, we have to keep in mind that just because we think somebody is doing something outside of the norm, that does not mean that there can legally be intervention. So you may just need to talk to, you know, if you know the person, talk to whomever it is. Say, hey, I noticed this about you. You know, what's going on? Or if you know somebody that knows the other person a little better, talk to their cousin or talk to their friend about that. Because there are not a lot of situations, actually, where people can intervene. A person would have to be deemed unfit in the moment to be, quote unquote, picked up, if you will. You can't just snatch people up because they're acting weird.
That was a good question, Joe.
I mean, it's permanent within our community. Most of the time, people have mental health episodes. The police are called.
Oh yeah.
And you know, we're because of the video now. Of course, we know things have always happened, but now we're able to see it more. But it's over and over and over. I just feel like, you know, we should know the correct resources to call to make. To get the best out of the situation rather than just trying to say, well, I just need to call somebody because I panic. Like, if people have the information and the resources, that can lessen them panicking. So,
well, and just as an aside, some of that, and it's a bigger picture thing that we have to address as a people, and it involves getting involved with politics, but that's a policy issue. I know particularly in the state of Florida, police are called because either a police or a credentialed mental health worker can write like what's called a Baker Act. And that's a temporary order to have someone institutionalized and treated. And so you call the police not just in panic, but because they have the power of the pen to actually do something. Because, you know, if me and you and our friend Ronald, we're out at a football game and Ronald has a manic episode. We know he has these, but he has a manic episode. But Ronald is like way beyond what we could deal with. He stopped taking his medicine. We didn't know it. We figured it out an hour and a half into the football game. We can't make Ronald do anything.
Right.
What is probably going to happen is the local authority, which would be the police department at whatever football game we're at, they're going to take him into custody. Now, we can do our best to explain to them that, hey, I know this about this guy. Don't take him to jail for disturbing the peace. You need to take him to TMH, or you need to take him to the Appalachian Health Center. People call the police because, not just because they panic, they really don't have a lot of alternative in an emergency, you know, in a pressing situation. But as you said, you know, this is why we have to pay attention to our loved ones and our friends, because if we're paying attention, we may be able to see some things going on before an episode happens.
Yeah, and the systemic issue you talked about is interesting, because it, for me, it made me think about, like, my wife is an RN, and she's constantly talking about the treatment that, you know, she sees from Black people, that Black people are getting in the hospital, when, you know, to her, it looks like they might be having some sort of mental issues. But, you know, to white people that aren't necessarily culturally competent, not their fault, they just aren't around Black people. They don't know. They don't know what's normal and what's not. So, I just sounded like I defended white people. Anyway,
yeah, you did.
It happened.
So, yeah, we all indoctrinated to some extent. She was talking about, you know, just the treatment that they get and how in some cases, even at the hospital, she's seen where nurses and doctors have called the police on patients who, you know, may have been a little unruly. But to her, it just looked like they were having some sort of mental episode,
mm-hmm.
and they weren't getting the care that they needed. And she also talks about how being one of the only black nurses wherever she is, you know, when black patients come in, they'll typically pull her off of whatever she's working on to come and, you know, process this patient.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it just made me think about all of those systemic problems that we have when we try to interact with a system that isn't necessarily designed to accommodate us or even recognize a lot of the nuances in our behavior that would signify to anybody that's grew up around black people, not to generalize, but to an extent, there is a sort of cultural understanding if you've
right.
grown up with black people that this is normal, and that is a little different. So maybe that needs to be a little bit, whereas, you know, when you're dealing with other groups, it's kind of like you don't have that. So anything that doesn't look normal to you, you're kind of, you know. So anyways, it just made me think about all of that. And there isn't a question in there anyway. It just made me think about that. So I just wanted to throw that out there. It's a conversation, man. Y'all stop beating up on me.
For sure. And I hate to prolong the point. But, I mean, the police have been long thought as a solution for whatever the colored people are doing.
Right.
Because not to be funny, but that just is. That's how they handle
right.
Unruly colored people. They call the police. Those yeah. same things can be presented by a white person. And you say, oh, I know what that is. That's a manic episode. It's textbook to them because, like you said, it presents to what they've seen and what they readily acknowledge. And until we as a system of providers are willing to apply not only cultural sensitivity, but quite frankly, just apply what's in the books to everybody equally, we're going to keep having some of these same issues.
So you don't think we need like our own separate black mental health standards, procedures, DSM, and all that other stuff?
So this is not, I wouldn't say that we don't, but I would say that as a starting point in the mental health community, for those that are already practicing and have to practice with what's out, just as a practitioner, use what you got. I mean, there are some of the things that are going to present the way they present. And the demographic information on the paper is not going to change what makes the diagnosis what it is. I am not ever against having our own because we need that because of those cultural nuances and things like that. But some of the disorders that we deal with are very significant disease processes as far as your physiological being. We wouldn't have, you know, a black cancer regimen necessarily. When it presents as breast cancer, it's going to be diagnosed as breast cancer and treated as breast cancer. So we need to do the same thing with bipolar disorder and multiple personality disorder and generalized anxiety, at least on a baseline. If it fits what's listed, we need to treat it as such and stop trying to move and say, oh, well, you know, those brown people, they're angry anyway. So it's just this. No, let's look at what it is. And if it fits, treat it the way you would treat it any other time. I would tell my clients, just like I tell my kids and my loved ones, if you have a practitioner that you think is being a little iffy with what you got, I tell all my practitioners, treat me the same way you would treat your daughter or your sister. Treat my mama the same way you would treat your mama. I want you to give them the same care, the same thoroughness, all of that, that you would give somebody that was near and dear to you. A lot of times they're going to give you the side eye when you say that, but they may go back and run an additional test or do something else that they weren't going to do because they're just not accustomed to doing it for people that don't look like them.
Yeah. Yeah, which is why I know one of the things that we've been pushing through these months that we do for mental health awareness is, putting it down in the atmosphere. We need more Black mental health professionals mm-hmm. to be able to take care of our people who understand where we come from and can empathize. Because, I mean, it's like you were saying, pretty much a lot of our people are pretty much just being given the same thought process and just thrown to the side and say, well, mm-hmm. this is that with those colored people. And it's not, like you said, they're not breaking down. Kind of similar to the what they call it, the opioid epidemic now. You know, back in the 80s, it was crack, but now it's opioids and all these things. And they're rolling out all these different programs now versus just when they were just locking Black people up. And so kind right. of similar with the mental health aspect, because even it does have a mental health effect and all those things there. So yeah, we need more Black mental health professionals. Y'all heard of. We need more. And Pat, Pat said he was going to get his master or something in mental health.
Me and Joe made an agreement that I would go to school to be a psychiatrist if he would go to school with me to be a psychologist.
Okay.
So I'm just waiting on Joe to talk to the counselor because I'm ready.
Yeah, hey man, don't let me hold you back, dog.
No, because it's like a comrade type program. You know, we got to do it together, otherwise the rate go up.
I support you, my brother.
Y'all are cohorts, so y'all got to go in at the same time.
Right. I even told him, because I don't want to do medical school either. I'm like you, Stacey. I love what I love about the human body and biology, and I'm always reading books on genetics, epigenetics, psychotherapy, psychoanalysis, all of that other stuff. But the idea of actually going to class and medical school just seems like a chore to me.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
So I don't want to force myself through it because I honestly, I don't feel like I could, if I'm being completely honest. I feel like I would fail out.
Yeah, like completely come unhinged. So shout out to all the physicians, like everybody that decided that was going to be their passion and they could do it, because it takes a lot.
Right, and so that's why I told
the first time they handed me a cadaver, I'd have been like, I gotta go.
Well, I would have fun there. I would just hate the math portions, and I would hate just like the tediousness of understanding certain things that I don't give a damn about.
So you're really not interested in how the leg bone is connected to the hip bone?
I'm not. I don't. I could give a shit. I could really care.
See, you ain't committed. You ain't committed.
I love most things about the human body, especially on the cellular or molecular or atomic level. I love those small details.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't care about like the larger structures. Like, I don't care about how muscles interact with tendons. Like, I don't care. I don't. And then I have to memorize all of these superfluous, all of these stupid words that don't, like, why can't I just call that the inner knee? Why do I have to call that the blah, 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 the blue, blah, blah from the blame, blame, blame with the woo, why, what? Like, what is that about? So, I don't know. But I told Joe that I would even go through the psychologist program. We could both be psychologists together because I'm not excited about medical school, so I'm just waiting on him.
Hey, well, you know,
it's on you, bro.
Yeah, all right.
You know what, Stacey, you can join us, and we can all get our PhDs together.
We could. Listen, like, I really need to get myself together. I'm like three courses shy of the coursework in a PhD program, and I just was like, this is too much. It's a lot. And then to write the book at the end, it's not being fun. We'll see.
Oh, I already got the book written. I'm ready there.
it's just some classes on the front end.
It's the classes on the front end that bother me. I can. That's why I said I love doing the research. I love doing the writing. I love going through the material. I really do. Like, I enjoy it. I just hate the class part of it.
Gotta be committed.
We should, like, go to change.org and get a petition to let people get joint doctorates. Because, I mean, the classwork, that's fun for me. Like, total nerd. Like, I'll go to the class. If you do the SPSS stuff and, like, get the people to sign the releases and fill out the surveys, we could do it.
We have to walk across the stage together.
Right?
I think they need to bring back apprenticeships and a lot of these fields that they've eliminated it from. And I think mental those fields where, because honestly, so much of it is, or should be in my anyways, on-the-job training to begin with. Not should be, but could be. That's a better way. Because there is something to be said for understanding the theories and the philosophies that you get from classwork. But, like, why can't somebody, like, it's almost like you can only become one of these types of professionals if you're the type of person that is good at this particular type of learning environment.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people out there who aren't good at college but would make wonderful professionals in these fields.
Hey. We got it. Well, let's write that petition. Let's go ahead and get these politicians together, get these petitions going so we can get it right. So that way y'all can get that joint doctorate and
when I can benefit. Say y'all, you mean we?
Right.
Yeah,
he always trying to exclude himself.
I just wanna be y'all friend and tell everybody, hey, I know them. I brought them food when they was in school.
Well, she's closer than me, so what we do is you go ahead, Stacey, and get your PhD right, and then we can join you as you start producing papers. We'll do the research and stuff. And then that way we can get an honorary doctorate through your work.
Gotcha. Okay.
It is. Get that Kanye doctorate.
Don't get the Kanye, bro.
Speaking of mental health, I think one of the external factors for him was Kardashianism.
There's no reason for that.
Crazy.
You know, but hey, if you black, and you get Kardashian in your bloodstream, you'll never be the same.
Like, that was crazy before that. We just ain't want to acknowledge it because everybody liked his music.
It went to another level with that Kardashian.
No, I didn't.
Are we trying to take up for them?
No, I'm not taking up for the Kardashians at all. I still don't even know why they're famous. But that being said, Kanye was crazy before he got some Kardashian yang yang.
Truth.
You know, if anything, money made him worse. But the dude was showing signs of random idiocy back in his earliest interviews.
Man, Kanye woke. What you talking about? He a genius. He woke.
That's what happens when you're so woke that you sleep.
So, all right,
Kanye's a zombie.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah. Right. All right, so we got to the point to where we down to our final question. Because we're messing around to have you on this line all night long talking. And so this is, you know, he's special. So since Pat is special, I have to set this question up, you know, specific for him. So here we go. You know.
So, this ain't even my question. Joe, you asked the question.
Thank you. I just want to set up for me, so thank you. If you were placed in charge of providing mental health care to the nation with minimal restrictions, or not to the nation, but to Black America with minimal restrictions, what would you change and how would you use the resources to improve the overall mental health of Black America?
The first thing I would do, if I could have my way, is to get rid of all lifetime restrictions on mental health services. I think that's one of the most detrimental things that we have. Just an aside, there are several health insurance companies that have a lifetime cap on different services. And mental health is one of the ones that gets cut off frequently. So I would do away with that off top. And then, you know, encouraging people by looking at policy for what is designated as a mental health professional and how we can use some other fields to cross skill sets. Because in certain states, they are very specific and very particular about which degree programs you have to complete in order to be credentialed in that state. Now, the schooling is important because you do need to understand the theories and the philosophy behind what you're doing, at least on a working level. But I think there can be transferable skills that can be used. So looking at those policies to make sure that there are more professionals that are readily available. One of the biggest problems we have is access. And that's simply because the practitioners aren't available in certain areas. Also, the same incentives they give other practitioners, doctors and dentists and other health professionals moving into areas where there is underrepresentation, give those incentives to mental health workers, just like they need doctors and nurses in the inner city or in some of these rural areas. Those people are having mental health issues as well. So providing that to give people an incentive to move, to uproot their families to places where they didn't know existed on the map. That is helpful because our people need to be made comfortable and they need to feel like there are people that can relate to them if we are ever to truly have our people jump on this and readily accept mental health services as a part of their healthcare team.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
That was thorough as shit. I like that.
You know, that's why she had Rainy mental health expert. So.
Heck yeah. Yo, that was, I like that. Yeah, yo, where's the fat man in the tank top?
So Stacey, if somebody hears this and they like, yeah, I want her to help me out, how can people get in contact with you, get in touch with you to be able to seek your services?
So I would say I would have them email me, and I'm going to spell my name because it's kind of funny like that. It's eustacia.trawick, eustacia.trawick at embarkmail.com. That's embarkmail.com. And if you shoot me an email, it may take one business day, but I will get back to you. And whatever your situation is, I will do my best to help get you in with me or help set you up on the way to finding somebody that can help you with whatever's going on, because I want you to be the best version of yourself.
There you go. And I'm glad you spelled Embark Mail, because, yeah. Yeah, oh, thank you. So, once again, thank you. Like, you always come through, give thorough information, real sound explanations, and I feel you put it in a digestible manner that people can take and be able to use. So, definitely thank you for coming through with us. You know, we'll be in contact with you. Because, like I said, you're a reigning mental health expert that we have on here. You're family to the show, so we definitely will want you back on the show in the future. But we ain't going to take up your time because we know you got to get back to your family. But thank you for joining us today, and we're definitely going to talk to you soon.
Thank you all for having me.
Yes, ma'am. It's Eustacia Trawick Dixon going down. See you later. All right. Yeah, Pat. Yeah. Oh, my bad.
Right.
Man, hey, let's restart real quick. You ready?
Word.
You go first.
chicken noodle soup with a baseball bat.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Chicken noodle soup. You didn't say how long it had to be.
But I didn't expect you to break out no little mama either.
That wasn't Lil Ma. She wasn't the first person to do that, was she?
I don't know.
I think that was, actually. You know what? You might be
right. Some New York stuff.
I popped a can of soda. Maybe it was Sprite. Maybe it was Diet. Because it was night. And we know that whenever soda's diet, it be dark skinned dead. Like melon and fire. Eating on chicken. Eating on my grits. Eating on my biscuits, and my tuna fish, eating on my head. Give me head. They don't even know. I be like, whoa, on my game. My name is Jeff Rowe.
Ooh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Jeff Rowe, for coming
through. That was a dope interview, though.
I know, right? Should be dropping them gems on y'all, folk, man. Open your minds up, open your brains up, expand yourself so you can learn.
Word.
Because we got to improve our mental health. We got to. Word. We have to.
Yeah.
Hey, so real quick, I don't remember who the person was, but I got a somebody DM me. Like, I get one DM a year. So you know how people be talking about folks sliding into that DM? I don't know nothing about that. So I get like one DM a year. But this person slid into my DM. So they was like, hey, I'm confused. I thought, what it was, I don't know what's the regular mental health awareness month. I should know that, but I can't think of it right now. But it was like, I thought mental health awareness month was in this month. What y'all got going on? And I was like, you know, well, we got this podcast network and we own it. And can't nobody tell us what to do, so we just decided to do what we wanted to do for black folks to add on to it, so you know. But that's the power of owning your own. You can do what you want to do when you want to for your people. You don't have to say or to ask nobody, and you can make it happen, and you can help improve your people, so you know. Yeah. Ain't that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to put that out there. So, because, you know. Somebody contacted.
What's a DM? Oh, a direct message.
Yeah, see, so you don't get it either, huh?
I mean, I get, like, messages from direct messages through, like, Facebook. Is that, does Messenger stuff count?
I guess. I mean, the people will be trying to talk to you and ask you questions.
Yeah.
Well, you get more DM activity than me, though.
Well, yeah, but people are always asking me questions. I ain't got nobody in my DM, like, trying to fuck or nothing.
Well, people don't ask me questions. They don't like me like that. That's all they don't like them either.
What you mad for?
I just wanted to clear my chest. That's it.
Guys, you
ain't got to DM me.
I tell some people to DM you so you feel better.
Nah, I want it to be genuine. Hey, man. Mental Health Awareness Month. You know we're going to come right back at you next week to wrap this month up with more information. Because we got to do our part, and we're just doing our best to do our part. And we're using our platform. So I'm Joseph Ward. He's Patrick Irvin. This is the Freedom Train Podcast Series. And we out. Like a thief in the night, because I think my teeth in the bite. You think I'm right? I'm thinking more light. What's up tonight? DMX.